You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
This is Violet with Camden Community Radio, and I'm here in the studio today with Sadia Conte Massera, who is the author of the new book, Single Mother, Breaking the Stereotype, which is going to be released on the 23rd of March at the Big Chill House on Pentonville Road. And the book launch is free. And so anyone who's interested should get onto Eventbrite to book their free ticket. So Sadia, thank you so much for coming in to speak with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I wonder if you could just tell us a bit more about your book.
Okay, so my book called Single Mother, Breaking the Stereotype is a memoir. It is about myself and what I went through. I had my son at 19, found out I was pregnant at 18. I come from a African background, so my mum was not at all happy to hear that her beloved daughter was pregnant.
Are you the only child?
Or? No, I've got one older sister.
Okay.
But yeah, it was my first year of uni, and she was.
Oh wow.
It was just coming in and throwing a bomb in the house. That's basically what happened. And yeah, the book came about because I was just, you know, experiencing a lot of negative responses. And I mean, that's understandable. But, you know, even when I passed being a young mum and I started going into my 20s, I found that a lot of people had a lot of negative things to say. And I realised that this was mainly coming from the media, which was feeding into society. And it got to a point where enough was enough. And and that's how the birth of the book came about. You know, it was always coming, I think, but it was just got to a breaking point. And that's when I was like, you know what, I'm going to break the stereotype. And
do you remember what that breaking point was?
Yes. I think it was, I was watching a show, and they were talking about single mothers. And everything on that show was just so negative. You know, the whole benefits, the whole, you know, struggling. And I was just like, you know, the whole, you know, I just, the word dysfunctional didn't sit right with me, because I was like, okay, fair enough, you say, you know, we're a dysfunctional home, but my child is very wholesome. He's in a home where he's loved, you know. And usually I would say a dysfunctional home is, you can have a dysfunctional home and two parents that are together but they don't love each other.
Yeah.
For me, that's dysfunctional. Whereas my son is in a home and he's being loved and he's taken care of. And yeah, that was one of the moments where I said, you know what, enough is enough. And that's when the idea actually came to me. And then obviously my mum passed away. And for me, that again was a pivotal moment where I felt like I had to, you know, I had to make a change. You know, I can't continue the way I was continuing. And my mum was a fantastic role model in my life, and she was a single mother, and I think that's when the penny really dropped for me, you know.
Yeah, so, that's great.
Yeah,
so you mentioned that you got a lot of negative, did you have personally a lot of negative reactions from people and things when you were going through it for yourself?
Yeah, I had a lot of so what are you gonna do now? Your life is going to be over.
So you mentioned you were at uni. Did you drop out?
No, I never dropped out.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
what did you study?
Out. I studied film and drama. So again, remember, that's being on a course like that, everyone, you've got a lot of people who wants to make it as an actor or actress, and everyone is very like out there. Everyone is very ambitious. And then for that to happen to me at that time, it was like, it was a big setback.
That's, you know, an incredible thing to carry on doing that when you're obviously going through so many things in your personal life as well. Like, already that whole university experience is very intense.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was. It was intense. And doing it with a young baby was very hard. But again, this is what I mean. And I'm not the only one to have gone to uni and had a baby or have gone to uni with kids. And that's why I think stories like this need to be heard, because there are loads of women out there who have had similar experiences, but they're not applauded. Instead, it's still the negative stuff is highlighted. And that's why I wanted to write a book, so that for mothers out there who just need that encouragement, because there were many times where I never had anyone that I could, apart from my own mum, but we're not the same, you know. I never had anyone that I could, you know, relate to and say they're at uni, they dropped out, they became pregnant, but they persevered. I didn't have that, and I feel like for a few who are may have found out they're pregnant or contemplating and they're at uni, maybe this book, they need a book like this to read and encourage them, you know.
So was there a point in your experience where you kind of suffered the strongest backlash, as in, was there a like maybe a point that people in your position or a similar position would recognize as well, that they would identify with, and how did you deal with that?
There was many. One of the main moments is in the book, and I don't want to say because I want you guys to read it. But I'll give you another example, and that was when it came to housing. A lot of the housing officers would just say, "You're not the only one this has happened to. So you should just get on with it. This is not going to be, we understand you've got a child, we understand that, you know, it's not easy, but get on with it, it's life." And there's no amount of, no amount of tears or sad stories you could tell them, they kind of became immune. And I felt like because I was a, came across as a stereotypical young black single mother, it was almost like it kind of hindered me from being able to be understood, because people felt like they already knew you because the media had already told them about me. They didn't know me personally, and that became an issue in terms of things like housing. You know, if things went wrong, trying to explain myself, it's almost like I was talking to them and they just weren't listening because they already made up their mind of what had happened or what was, you know, they had made up their mind about me. So, yeah, a lot of the time there was many points where I felt like, you're not listening to me. You already have an idea of what you think of me. So I feel like there's no point of me explaining myself. But yeah, the way I dealt with it was just by continuously just showing them me. And regardless, if they don't want to listen, I'm just going to continue to be me. And my character will shine through. By if it hasn't shone through the first meeting, through the second meeting, it's going to shine through, you know. And then they'll get to, you know, they start to warm up to your character and just not necessarily always get offended by some people's perceptions, because at the end of the day, sometimes they just need to get to know you for a perception to change. So my approach was just to be calm and just, but firm, and, you know, because you don't want to be calm and then people take the mick out of you. So you have to be firm, but not aggressive, but stand your ground. And I found that when it came to things like housing, I had to take it with a pinch of salt and just show them me and show them that I'm genuine, I'm not this person that you think I am.
Did you get any surprising support? Did you get support from any surprising places at the time? Someone who you would presume would have a negative view and actually had a more positive spin on things?
My mum. I mean, like you said, you know, everyone would say, yeah, but that's your mum. But I honestly thought that my life was over when I found out. And you would read in the book, I, honest to God, I literally was like, you know what? This is not worth it. I'm going to go and arrange to get rid of the pregnancy. I literally thought that my mum would just kill me or disown me. Like, and I was so shocked. Up to this day, I was just so thankful for her reaction. I was really blown away by it. And then, you know, the university was very supportive, and I was actually quite shocked. They were like my lecturers, I remember, were going to them and telling them, well, what had happened, and they were just like, we'll support you in whatever you decide to do, and they gave me options. And I kind of felt that they would be like, you know, you're going to have to leave, you're going to have to take a year out. Even though they were suggesting it, it was more like, you know, we, whatever you decide to do, we'll support you. And I found that really, really nice, you know, really nice with them and thoughtful, because they didn't have to. They don't owe me anything. So that was nice. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in to speak to us today. Was there anything else you wanted to add for the end?
Just where you can find me. You can find me on Twitter at SingleMotherBTS. You can find me on Facebook, Single Mother Breaking the Stereotype. You can also download your free ticket from Eventbrite, which is going to be taking place. The book launch is going to be taking place on the 23rd of March, 6:30 at the Big Chill house in King's Cross, and I'll be looking forward to see people and hear people's own personal stories and just connect with everyone, really. So thanks for listening. Thanks for having me, Violet.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. As I grew older, things started to make sense. The sacrifices that had been put in place to give us a happy childhood never came easily, especially when doing it alone. One time that stood out to me was when I was in my first year of primary school. It was 1992 and Christmas was fast approaching. This was a time when everyone had the same interior design in their homes, different shades of brown for everything, so the enormous green overdecorated Christmas tree stuck out like a sore thumb in the corner of the sitting room. I remember seeing a big box wrapped in shiny gold wrapping paper with a red ribbon right underneath the tree. The paper was so shiny, you could see the reflection of the TV beaming over it. As you went closer, the bright red tag read, "To Elima and Sadia." As Christmas morning came, we both rushed down the corridor to throw ourselves on our mother's bed, nudging her to wake up so we could open the presents together. "Mummy! Can we open them in your room, please? Please?" We climbed over her and snuggled up to her warm body under the cosy covers. "Okay, bring them in, don't run." We ran straight to the mysterious gold present in the sitting room. What could it possibly be? We helped each other as we struggled to carry it through Mum's bedroom door. As kids, everything was heavy to carry, so we behaved like removal van men as we went back and forth with this unknown shiny gift. "Wait, open the card first, girls." Our mum looked on with a warm smile. On Christmas Day, no one really cared about the cards. Elima rushed to open it and paused as she read it. Her face became puzzled. "What does it say, Elima? Tell me," I said eagerly. "Go on, read it out loud." She looked over to my mother for reassurance as my mother nodded at her to go ahead. "To my darling Elima and darling Sadia, have a Merry Christmas and a wonderful New Year. Lots of love, Daddy." There was a short pause and a light chuckle from me. I was embarrassed and confused, to be precise. "Go on, open your gift then." We looked at each other and back at Mum, who had the best poker face in town, and started to rip open the gift. The anticipation increased as the sounds of the tearing wrapping paper decreased. It was upside down and it was in a brown box. "What is it?" We laughed with excitement as the man I had never met became Father Christmas in a split second. We turned it around and what lay before us was what we had been asking for all year round. My sister gasped, "A Sega Mega Drive with two games!" At the time, it was like getting the latest version of a PlayStation. We were ecstatic. My mother looked on and smiled as we went to hug her, showering her with kisses. It wasn't for me. However, even at the mere ages of 4 and 8, we knew not to comment. As we got older, the issues I thought I never had a problem with gradually caught up with my emotions. I realised, actually, it didn't feel good not to have or know my father. But unfortunately for us, Mum was right. He didn't care about us.
You're listening to a download from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.